Welcome to the Locked On Steelers podcast. I am your host, Tony Serino, and this is your daily dose of all things Steelers. Today on the show, we are starting our positional reviews for the 2018 season. We're going to go through position by position and talk about how that position performed in 2018 and how this team can improve that position in 2019. We'll start today with the quarterback position, which I know, look, how are they going to improve the quarterback position? Well, they're not. I mean, they have Ben Roethlisberger. He needs to play better. But we'll talk about Ben and how he did in 2018 and what this team can expect from Mason Rudolph and Josh Dobbs going forward. We'll also talk about the AAF, which debuted this weekend. Did you guys watch? I'll give you my thoughts on what I saw out there. And we'll also talk about the fact that the Cleveland Browns have signed Kareem Hunt, the running back from the Kansas City Chiefs, who was cut and is going through this domestic violence thing. We'll talk about that today as well. Welcome to the show. I am your host, Tony Serino. You can find more of this podcast by going to iTunes, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, wherever you find podcasts. Search Locked On Steelers. Hit that subscribe button. Make sure you get your daily dose. You can follow me on Twitter at Steeler Country. You can find us on Facebook. Search Locked On Steelers. Hit the like button. Make sure you also join the Facebook group. And you can also find us on Instagram at Locked On Steelers. Hey, before I start, I do want to let you guys know the Locked On Podcast Network is doing a survey to try to find out what you fans are most interested in. So head on over to lockedonpodcast.com/survey. Fill out that survey. Really helps me, helps the entire network. So if you can give that, if you just spend a couple minutes filling out that survey, really helps me, really helps the network. Again, lockedonpodcast.com/survey. But we got to start today talking about play on the field. And the only football on the field this weekend was the AAF. I don't know if you guys watched this weekend. I did watch on Saturday. I watched both the Orlando game. Orlando played Atlanta. Orlando looked very, very good. Maybe the only team out of the eight that played this weekend that was competent on offense for all four quarters. Well, I shouldn't say all four quarters. They struggled early in the game. Once they found their groove, whoo boy, they were dominant out there. And then also watched the San Antonio game they played against. Was it San Diego? The Sunday games, I didn't really get a chance to see. One of them was on CBS Sports Network. I think I do get that channel, but I don't know where that channel is. And the other one was on NFL Network, and I just ended up missing that game altogether. Did enjoy what I watched, though. You know, look, the play on the field, obviously it's not up to the NFL's caliber, right? You know, we're not watching great football out there. But I'll give the AAF this. This feels like a natural evolution of the sport of football. And by that, I mean the rule changes that they put in play. You know, the XFL back in the day tried to fix the NFL. You know, they wanted to be more fun, right? The no fun league stuff. They wanted to get rid of that. They wanted to make the XFL more fun. But it came with all this sideshow stuff, right? I mean, it was connected to wrestling. It was Vince McMahon. And that, you know, they were just so over the top with a lot of their rule changes. You know, the game started with a sprint to the football. The first time that ever happens, I believe the guy tore his ACL on the first play ever. You know, the XFL was, there were some interesting things that they did, right? And I think one of the big things that the XFL gets credit for is this idea that cameramen are on the field. And you see that in the NFL now, right? where cameramen will run on the field after a big play, especially a touchdown. And so that, you know, you can credit that to the XFL. But so much of the XFL was just sideshow BS, and none of that stuff ever made it into the NFL. Whereas the AAF does kind of feel like this is a natural evolution of where the NFL is going anyway, right? And they're just taking a little bit more chances. You know, they still have a replay system and all of that, but they have this official in the booth who just kind of, you know, gets rid of egregiously bad calls. Now, they didn't have as many egregiously bad calls, and I'll get to why in a second, because I think it's another big thing with the AF that I really liked. But they also have a lot of transparency during their replay system. Now, the replay system was very strange. I don't know if you guys got to see the Orlando game against Atlanta. There was a catch in the end zone, which I'm glad they called it a catch, because it's one of those, like, look, the guy clearly had the ball, and whether or not the ball kind of hits the ground a little bit, I mean, he caught the ball. It's a touchdown. Give the guy a touchdown. But the way that her inner monologue of going through it didn't make a whole lot of sense to me. I was almost thinking, like, is this an actor that's talking, you know, like, that's getting things in their ear that they're trying to say out? Because it just didn't feel like her inner monologue, you know, had a lot of flow to it or didn't make a whole lot of sense what she was saying. She kept saying, oh, yeah, we're going to keep this. We're going to keep this. Definitely not a catch. And then she goes, oh, no, we're going to make this a catch now, because it had no flow to it whatsoever. But regardless, I liked that. I liked the transparency there. I think that's something the NFL has to seriously consider. And by the way, if we get to hear Al River on And I would love to hear Al Riveron, and it would make the whole process a lot easier, and it'd make me not come on here and spew conspiracy theories about how Al Riveron is in the pocket of the New England Patriots every week. If they would just, you know, if I could hear him and hear, you know, what he's going through in his mind and what they're thinking about, he and the official that he's talking to, I think that's a lot better. And I love the AAF for doing that. I also think, and the biggest thing for me, and this is already coming in the NFL, but no kickoffs. I'm surprised at how much I loved it. And I did love no kickoffs. You know, the NFL has been going in this direction. No kickoffs is coming. You know, they keep changing it over and over again. Now we're going to, you know, out to the 25, so they have more touchbacks. And then, you know, no running starts anymore. No wedge blocks. Right? I mean, they just keep changing kickoffs over and over. So just get rid of it. And they keep not wanting to get rid of it because it has been a traditional part of football. And it does feel like a big change to the game. Right? If you got rid of kickoffs, everyone's going to start from the 25 now. That's huge. I mean, that is a huge change to the game. You're getting rid of a play, a monumental play that happens after every score at the beginning of the game and at the end of the beginning of the half. But boy, watching the AAF, I mean, I won't miss kickoffs for a second. And if you watch the games, you know why. It's because the flow of the game's broken up. And maybe this had something to do with the fact that there were no commercials, but there were very limited commercials in those moments. They didn't have any TV timeouts, and their commercial breaks were very, very short. I know the NFL did this too, where they wanted to condense the game and get the game flowing a little more. If the NFL wants to get the game flowing more, get rid of kickoffs. You don't realize how much time is wasted between team scores, team kicks, extra point, commercial, kickoff, commercial, then we're watching offense again. By removing the kickoff, you're removing a commercial break and a play that doesn't matter, right? And it just made the game flow so much easier. The team would score, they go for two. By the way, they got rid of extra points. I don't know if I'm a fan of getting extra points are fine, but they got rid of extra points as well. So everyone's going for two, but essentially team scores, team goes for two, commercial, boom, other teams out there on the 25. I mean, the flow of the games was really, really nice. The other thing I really liked about the AAF is that you're still playing by the same kind of rule set, right? Pass interference, still pass interference. You're still playing, you know, by all the same NFL rules, but they're not calling the, you know, hit them too hard type stuff. They're not calling every ticky-tack thing. In fact, it does feel like the AAF and their officiating is taking a step back, and it's more of a let them play type league. And that was really refreshing to watch a play and go, oh, they're gonna call that for PIR. He's gonna get called for that hit. You know, even though we as fans know, like, that's not the intention was not there to make a to hit the guy in the head or whatever. You know, all these rules that we've been watching for the past five, even 10 years now with some of these rules, the AAF doesn't have that. And it was so refreshing to watch a league where you would see a big hit or you would see what was an accidental blow to the head and know, oh, they're not going to call 15 yards of that, or they're not going to call the ticky-tack PI call there. They're going to let these guys play. That was really refreshing to watch. And so, look, the play on the field, the actual games themselves, they weren't that interesting. And you got to hope that as the year goes on, these teams start to gel a little more, because you could just tell there wasn't a whole lot of rhythm outside of Orlando, who, again, Orlando's offense and what Steve Spurrier did there, Garrett Gilbert, Akeem Hunt, you know, they've got some, first of all, they've got some talent there in Orlando. I mean, there's a lot of talent around the league. One thing, and I talked about this on Friday, I am impressed about how many former players they're getting. And it did make me think this other thing, which is that, you know, we talk about, you know, spring league, and is there a demand for this? Would we football fans watch a spring league? I think absolutely yes, I would watch a spring league, right? I mean, I'm going to continue watching the AAF. Although, you know, look, if the product never gets any better than this, if the games are always going to be of this quality, yes, I am going to fall off because the football is just not that good, right? Am I going to watch, you know, Mac football in the spring if it was on? You know, I would watch it because it's fun for a little bit, but then, yeah, I would fall off, right? So the product on the field still has to get a little better, and I think it can. But the other thing is, and I started thinking about this, you know, we have all these guys that are on the practice squads, and we used to have NFL Europe. How much funner would it be if Mason Rudolph were the quarterback of a team this weekend? How much more likely are you to watch if Mason Rudolph's out there? Right? If you remember Trey Griffey, Ken Griffey Jr.'s kid who had a great training camp and was coming on at the end of last year. Damone Patterson, if these were the players out there, guys who, you know, they're clinging to rosters, yes, but barely. Let those guys, the NFL had a true developmental league where they would let these guys go and play and develop their skills. Now, injury is going to play into that, and I get why the NFL doesn't want to do that, but man, it would be so much more interesting if a guy like Mason Rudolph were out there. If a guy, even Damone Patterson and Trey Griffey and some of the guys we got to watch back in training camp, if they got a chance to play, that would make me even more interested, and I think it would make the play on the field that much better. So I did enjoy AAF. I'm going to continue watching. Last week, I'm interested to know what you guys think. The Facebook group, I know, has a thread going by the people who watched. Let me know. SteelerCountry@gmail.com, the email address. You can also at me on Twitter, @SteelerCountry. Let me know if you watched the AAF this week, if you're going to continue watching. It sounds like, from a ratings perspective, the CBS game on Saturday obviously did gangbusters in ratings, and you knew it would because it's on national TV. From here on out, though, everything else is on TNT and NFL Network and CBS Sports. It's going to be a little harder to watch, and that way I'm interested to see if the ratings and that kind of thing continue. All right, let's get to the actual NFL news. We talked about Kyler Murray last week. Well, Kyler Murray has actually come out now and said he is going to play football. So he will be in the draft. He will be drafted. He put out a statement. He's committed to playing football. So now the question is, does Kyler Murray go in the first round? And if he does, he likely goes in those top 20 picks. That's great. That's great news for Steeler fans, as that means a player will fall down to 20 that wouldn't have if Kyler Murray had decided to play baseball. Or even if Kyler Murray, one thing I was wondering is, how long is Kyler Murray going to play this game? I know he had to report to spring training by the 15th of February, but could he have kept this kind of balancing act going all the way up until the draft? And what would that have done to his draft stock? So you got to assume now that he's in the draft, that he's a Heisman Trophy winning quarterback from Oklahoma. He put up huge numbers there. I haven't watched a ton of his tape. I watched him during the year. Does feel like he should be a first round pick to me, especially given that a lot of these quarterbacks in a draft like this, where really Dwayne Haskins is the only true first round quarterback, and everyone else you're talking yourself into, does feel like Kyler Murray is another guy that the NFL is going to talk itself into when it comes to a first round pick. So I look for Kyler Murray to get picked in the first round, likely in the top 20, and that means a better player for the Steelers when they pick at 20. And then the other big news on Monday was that the Cleveland Browns are signing troubled running back Kareem Hunt. Now, this is a player that Steeler fans had been talking about potentially bringing in this offseason, or at least it had been brought up on our Locked On Steelers Facebook group as to whether or not the Steelers should bring in a guy like Kareem Hunt. And I've talked about this before on the podcast, right? The idea of, you know, what do the Steelers exactly have with James Conner? We know that he's a starter capable back because he was the starter in 2018. But is he the long-term starter for the Steelers, or should the Steelers look to bring in some competition there at the position? Then where does that leave Jalen Samuels? Where are the Steelers at running back? It's something we'll talk about as we continue this week and we start doing the positional breakdowns. But interesting for the Cleveland Browns that they are the ones to bring in Kareem Hunt. Now, of course, Kareem Hunt has this troubled past, and he's going to get suspended by the NFL. He's got a ton of off-the-field problems to deal with, and the Browns will now have to deal with that themselves. Look, Kareem Hunt will be suspended at some point, right? He got cut by the Chiefs at the end of last year, but not actually suspended. He was just put on the reserve exempt list by the commissioner while they investigate. That investigation, I guess, is still going. There is no suspension yet. You have to imagine, though, given how hard the NFL has come down on this in the past, especially most recently with Ezekiel Elliott, and I believe he served a 6-game suspension. So for Kareem Hunt, you have to imagine that the suspension starts at 6 games and is likely even going to be further than that. So the Browns are looking at getting Kareem Hunt for half a season at best, I would assume, potentially less than that. Now, but regardless of all that, let's talk about the player that the Browns are getting and what this does to the Browns and their football team, because this is a question we're going to be talking about all offseason, which is, where do the Steelers fit in the AFC North, but where do the Cleveland Browns fit in the AFC North? You know, the Steelers felt like the most talented team in the AFC North last year, and yet they didn't even win the division, right? That was the Baltimore Ravens, who really at this point kind of feel like the third most talented team in the division. Now, you've got the Steelers, who probably still are the most talented team, although we'll see what happens with Antonio Brown as we go here. But then you've got the Browns right behind them. They are, you know, you keep hearing about how the Browns are amassing talent, and they certainly are. And they certainly have been over the past couple years. And that resulted after they got rid of Hugh Jackson, in quite a little winning streak there at the end, right? They won five of their last seven games. They ended up finishing the year 7-8-1. You know, going from 0-16 to 7-8-1, especially given that Hugh Jackson was their coach for pretty much half the season, it was a hell of a turnaround. And you know, the big thing there was not just firing Hugh Jackson, but promoting Freddie Kitchens to offensive coordinator really opened up that offense. And one of those players that you know, really succeeded in that Freddie Kitchens offense was Nick Chubb, who their second-round pick from Georgia. I thought Nick Chubb, one of the best young running backs in the league last year. I was really impressed with him in the, you know, again, in the limited carries he got early in the year. But then as he, you know, as that season opened up, or as the offense opened up for him, I thought he was terrific. And so what's interesting to me here now is bringing in Kareem Hunt to that offense. Who is the starter? Is it Nick Chubb? Is it Kareem Hunt? Are they going to split carries? You have this kind of weird opportunity cost problem in Cleveland now where, you know, Kareem Hunt and Nick Chubb, both these big play guys, but you want to kind of get them going, right? You want to get your running back into the flow of the game. The Steelers had this problem back when they had Le'Veon Bell, right? You didn't want to take Le'Veon Bell off the field, one of the best young running backs in the league. You wanted to kind of get him into the game and get him going. And, you know, when they took him out and they put in, whether it was LeGarrette Blount or D'Angelo Williams or James Conner, just kind of felt like a lost possession in that game because this is the drive that they're going to keep Le'Veon on the bench. You're going to rest Le'Veon. It's kind of a lost drive. Now, look, obviously Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt are both better than whoever the Steelers' backup was at the time, but you kind of want to ride the hot hand. I don't know how the Browns are going to manage this from an offensive perspective. It'll be interesting to watch that because, you know, the running back is an interesting position. There's only one ball. It's like having two really good quarterbacks, so you're only going to have one of them out there at a time. You could try to play two running back sets, but only one of them is getting the ball on the play, right? And so it's a weird look. They are certainly amassing talent. I don't know though that this makes them a better football team overall. And look, you know, the Browns are certainly going to be a contender. And we're as I said, we're going to talk about this as the offseason goes on because the Browns have a ton of cap space. They're likely to be, you know, they're likely to be players in the free agency market. This team is only going to get better as we go. And the real interesting thing here as we get into the regular season is going to be, you know, where do the Steelers fit? Are they still the best team in the AFC? Are we actually look at the AFC North? Are we looking at an AFC North where potentially the Cleveland Browns are the most talented team in the division? It's something we'll talk about as the offseason rolls on. And then we'll finish up today by starting our position reviews. I want to go through each position on the roster and talk about how that position did in 2018, how they can improve that position going into 2019, or if they need to improve that position going into 2019. We'll start with the quarterback position where, you know, this one's kind of easy, right? No, they do not need to improve it. Ben Roethlisberger is the quarterback, will continue to be the quarterback. He is expected to sign a contract extension this offseason that will keep him with the team for another 3 to 5 years. So they have their quarterback of now. They also have their quarterback of the future in Mason Rudolph, the quarterback they took in the third round last year from Oklahoma State. So this position is set. And how can they improve on it in 2018? I mean, they really can't. They just need Ben Roethlisberger to play better. Ben had his best statistical season in 2018, he threw for over 5,000 yards. He threw 34 touchdowns. You know, he was fantastic statistically, other than the interceptions that he threw. And that was the real problem for Ben Roethlisberger, you know, statistically speaking. Now, you look at his play on the field. I think early on in this season, this offense really struggled to push the ball down the field. The chemistry between he and Antonio Brown wasn't there. And I think this offense still performed at its best this year when there was more of a running game. And you look at the fact that Ben threw almost 700 times this year, you'd like to see that dialed back. You know, the fact that he threw 16 interceptions was more of a byproduct of the fact that he threw the ball so often rather than, you know, some sort of reckless play on Ben's part. I think he does need to do a better job of seeing the field and that sort of thing. But, you know, double-digit interceptions is what we've seen from Ben Roethlisberger, you know, five of the last 6 years. This is not something that is foreign to him. He is a double-digit interception guy, has been, you know, really for the majority of his career. So the more you give opportunities to Ben Roethlisberger, you know, the more he's going to throw interceptions. And you know, to that point, 2018 was actually not a terrible year for him as far as a percentage of interceptions to attempts, just 2.4%, which is his lowest in, what, 4 years. So, you know, from that perspective, look, this wasn't Ben's best year. People will say, well, he threw for 5,000 yards. He threw for 34 touchdowns. This was his best year of his career. It was not his best year. You look at the play on the field. If this was the best of Ben, you know, I mean, come on. We know this was not the best of Ben. I would go back to 2014. If we're looking at what was the best Ben Roethlisberger we've ever seen in his entire career, it was 2014. You know, that year he nearly threw for 5,000 yards. He threw 32 touchdowns, but just 9 interceptions, and his interception percentage that year was 1.5%. That's the Ben Roethlisberger that I love to see again. He threw 600 times that year, but you know, look, his interception, his touchdown to interception ratio, so much better. I mean, it's over 3-1. This year, it was barely 2-1. And in a year, you know, the 16 interceptions is also exacerbated by the fact that the defense just didn't get their own turnover. So every time the offense turned the ball over, I mean, it was a, you know, it's kind of the double whammy here. If we're turning the ball over and the defense isn't getting any turnovers, that became a real problem. So how can this team be better? I think, you know, Ben's play, what's nice about Ben is that at 36, we really haven't seen any sort of precipitous drop in his play. People will point to the interceptions. He's thrown, you know, look, he's thrown far more than 16 interceptions in a year. He threw 23 back in 2006. This was not his worst performance from that perspective. As I said, as a percentage of attempts, this was not his worst performance. We're not really seeing a drop-off at 36, which is great. We've seen, you know, we've seen guys like Tom Brady play into their 40s, Drew Brees play into their 40s. Can we see five more years of Ben Roethlisberger playing at this level? I hope so, and I just hope that Randy Feuchner and this offense takes a look in the mirror this offseason and understands how important the running game is to keeping this offense successful. I think that's going to be a big part of this. You know, this offense has always run best when it was run through Le'Veon Bell, and even this year, it ran best when it was run through James Conner. Then I go to the backup quarterback situation. This is another. I mean, look, this is set, right? The Steelers are going to keep Josh Dobbs. He's a valuable asset at a very cheap price, and then you have Mason Rudolph, who is your quarterback of the future. The question here for me between Dobbs and Mason Rudolph is, you know, we thought we had a two-man competition for who could be the quarterback of the future. You know, watching Josh Dobbs against Oakland this year, you really have to wonder if that's going to be your quarterback of the future. He'd really have to make some huge strides year over year to see, you know, what we saw from Josh Dobbs against Oakland turn into this quarterback of the future. And that really, you know, what really is the deal here is it all rests on Mason Rudolph. Mason Rudolph is the quarterback of the future, or should be. And if he's not, what a waste of a pick it was a year ago to take him in the third round. You know, he's got to be able to beat out Josh Dobbs for the backup spot this year, and he should be. I go back and watch his preseason play from last season, and you know, he was a deer in headlights for the majority of the preseason, all the way up until that Carolina game where I thought he played really well and made some nice throws in that game, and that was the last we saw of him. So, you know, he's gonna have, you know, he's had all these practices and whatnot, these reps in practice to improve. We'll see what we get from him as we get into minicamp and training camp. But you know, this is not a position where the Steelers are going to go out and sign a free agent or draft anyone. They need better play from Ben Roethlisberger, but I think that comes with, you know, an offense that's less reliant on him to make those kind of plays. And then from the backup spot, you know, I think that this team just needs to hope that Mason Rudolph makes the kind of leaps that he's expected to year one to year two for a player that was taken in the third round and thought of so highly by this front office. All right, that'll do it for me today. Thank you all for listening. If you want to leave feedback, SteelerCountry@gmail.com, the email address. You can follow me on Twitter @SteelerCountry, and I'll be back tomorrow for more Locked On Steelers.